Hi, it's Simon Phipps, standing in for Randall Schwartz, who unfortunately is ill. This is going to be Floss Weekly soon, and we're going to have an IRC client that runs on your server, written in JavaScript, runs inside Node.js. You're really not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps standing in for Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 484, recorded May 16th, 2018. The Lounge. Hello, this is Simon Phipps standing in for Randall Schwartz. I'd like to welcome you to Floss Weekly. Our guests this week are an IRC client, and I've got a wonderful co-host joining me from his studio. Wonderful studio you've got there, actually. Do please join me, Jonathan Bennett.
Yes, Simon, it's good to see you again.
So that's a very fantastic microphone you have there. I think that yours might be even nicer than mine is. I don't know.
Well, you know, different mics for different people, kind of like different strokes for different folks.
So Randall has gone down with another case of taco poisoning in Tijuana, which almost sounds like it's a bad plot device from a TV series. But that means that I am thrust once again into the opportunity of presenting a show I have no clue about. So this IRC thing, it's called thelounge.chat. What do you know about it, Jonathan?
I did a little bit of looking. So I use a program called WeChat, which is kind of the same idea. And it's you run it on a server, and then you connect to WeChat, usually through a command line, and it allows you to stay plugged into your IRC channels all the time. And it looks like the Lounge is very similar concept, but done in a browser as opposed to a command line. So, you know, a little less geeky maybe than what I use, but it looks pretty slick, really interesting.
Right. So kind of like IRC Cloud then. Don't know if you've seen that one.
That's one I'm not particularly familiar with.
So I normally do my IRC. Here on the show, I'm logged in with a thing called Bird, which is a Chrome plugin. And I'm normally using a thing called Riot, which uses a bridging network called the Matrix that bridges chat systems together. So there's a whole lot of stuff in here. I'll be quite interested to find out how the Lounge compares with all this other stuff we're using. Do you use IRC much?
I do. There's a couple of projects I kind of stay plugged into with IRC, and then obviously the Twit IRC channels.
Right. Well, this blends in nicely. We had Lib Purple on the show a couple of weeks ago, and that showed us how IRC looks to people of my age. I'll be fascinated to find out how IRC looks to people of your age. So we probably ought to go get these guys in to come and talk to us. Our guests today are Al McKinley and Jeremy Astori. Welcome to Floss Weekly.
Thank you. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
This is all excellent stuff. So could you explain what your project is to somebody who only knew that he was doing Floss Weekly 20 minutes ago?
Yeah, sure. So it is, in simple terms, a web-based IRC client and with what we call a bouncer in IRC terminology. And what that means is that it's running on a server. Your connection to IRC is running on a server so that when you connect from a different machine, you are using the same connection. So you can see all of the rooms and the chats that you had opened before and continue those conversations without disconnecting from the IRC server.
Right. So that means that I can treat IRC like a chat room that's got history rather than like a radio station that I tune into and I miss everything that's gone before.
Correct. So just like Al said, it's something that runs on a server you own, and therefore if you log in the morning, you still have access to your session from the day before, and you still have your conversations that happened when you were away. So it's very similar to how Slack works, or you mentioned IRC Cloud. It's very similar to that, but all open source, all free software, and maintained by your community instead of a company.
Right, right. And so if you restart the client, does it have the sessions that you were running before you restarted it? So is it actually logging, or is it simply an IRC client that is running on a server, and if I restart it, it forgets everything like my normal IRC client does?
No, it will remember. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, it will still need to reconnect to the IRC servers, but it will remember what rooms you had open. And I think this isn't in the newest released version, but it will be in the next version. It will load back your previous logs from the channels so you can see them as well.
But right. The slight distinction is that that's when you restart the server, which is usually remote. But if you restart your client, on the browser, the tab in your browser, or the local client if you have it pinned to your home screen, you will not need to restart everything. Everything is still there. It's a browser tab, so everything is there without having to restart everything.
Right. So I've not actually heard of your project before. I was actually in a conversation with some collaborators yesterday. We were talking about which system we should use for chat for our project. And one of them suggested I use IRC Cloud. I'm already using Riot and Matrix. I've got I'm aware of at least a couple of other IRC server-based projects. Could you give us the strengths and weaknesses, why your project is the one that we ought to be using at OSI, which is where I was having the conversation?
I'll start off with that. So if we compare to the example you gave of IRC Cloud, IRC Cloud is a great project and has done a lot for IRC. But the two key things about it are that it's hosted by the company. So if you're messaging on it, all your logs I don't know for certain what their logging strategy is, but their logs are stored by them, so you can see them again. So some people might not want to turn that over to a third party. And obviously, if they ever shut down, then you won't have your client anymore. The advantage of the lounge is that because it's self-hosted, that means you have control over your data, you have control over how it's run, you control over whether it's run. And obviously the other thing being it's open source, especially for something like the OSI. Open source is obviously quite important. You can contribute if you want, but if not, then even just the idea of the OSI using a project that isn't open source, I'm sure would not make some people happy in the OSI.
Yeah, we try very hard to only use open source tools, but you have to be pragmatic.
Of course.
Sometimes it's far more important for our mission critical tools for us to have a reliable availability, and that takes priority over an open source tool. But open source tool is our second priority for all of these things. So is there a hosted version we could use, or if we decide to go for this, have we got to host it ourselves?
There is no hosted version yet. It's not in the plans because all of us work on the lounge on our free time and therefore for free. So we don't have plans for that. But if we get sufficient support, that's not something we could exclude. That way, if you're looking for reliability, the best way is to host it yourself. That way you don't have to rely on a third-party company or organization to handle that. And I think that's the key strength that you could use, is that you can host it yourself, have your own monitoring, have your own backups. Everything is on your end, and if something breaks, you're not depending on another third party company or whatever to get it back online.
Yeah, that's I love the thought. But our experience has been that when volunteers are going to run these things, when the volunteer times out, they leave the organization or they have a family situation, suddenly we lose capability. And so we've tended to prefer paid hosting. We're very happy to pay people to host stuff. We would rather they were hosting open source software. So, I mean, is there an easy containerized version where I can just flick a switch and have it hosted on AWS or something?
So we do have a Docker image, which is quite easy to set up. There is the one more difficult thing in that it currently doesn't have an internal IRC server. So if you're setting it up, you also have to set up an IRC server. However, that is one thing that we're currently working on, adding a plugin to have an IRC server built in. Obviously an optional thing, which would allow you to have just one setup in the Docker, which would then run it. But as of just now, assuming you have an IRC server as well, you can just run this Docker image and get it up and running. And there's nothing stopping somebody setting up a company to host the lounge for other people and companies.
So why do I need an IRC server? Isn't this an IRC client? Can't it just use an existing server like the one that we're using for Twit well-known ones?
Yeah, it absolutely can. But if it's something that you don't have your own IRC server set up and you don't want to use someone else's server, then you're going to have to set up your own IRC server to connect to. But absolutely, if part of what you wanted to do was connect to, for example, Freenode set up and connect to the Twit IRC, that would definitely work. And as you say, you can just set up this Docker image to do that and run it, and that should work.
So to answer your original question, you can, as of now, you can run it through Docker. You don't need a server. You can just have the client version running. And you mentioned AWS. I'm running my instance on an AWS instance, and it's just pop it there and it connects to Freenode. It's currently connected to the Twit network. So I don't manage it myself. I put it in AWS in an EC2 instance.
Before we get too far into the technical weeds, Al, what is your role in the project?
So I'm one of the project maintainers. When we set up the lounge as a fork from the previous project, I'd been talking to Jeremy about it, and I'd kind of got involved with some code contributions and was interested in helping move the project along. And there was a little bit of stagnation at that point. So there were a few of us that got together to continue on the lounge. And maintainer, I guess, would be the answer.
And Jeremy, same question. What is your role in this project?
Yeah, so a bit of backstory. So the project was forked from another project called Shout that I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment. And I was a maintainer of the original project, Shout, and I set up the current project with the community. So I've been project maintainer since day one, is the answer to that question. And I'm also a developer and do a lot of things on it.
All right, very good. We do, of course, have an IRC chat room that people can log in and ask questions. And we do have a question from there who asked it? Virgil wants to know, is there end-to-end encryption? And I'm gonna expand on his question just a little bit. Is there encryption between the browser and the client? And then is there any encryption between the client and the server for IRC?
I can help answer that. The short answer is no. The longer answer is it's possible. And way back when I was working on Shout, I worked with someone else trying to set up an OTR of the record support. So for end-to-end encryption between clients to clients, never got to finish because we had another, 2 billion pull requests open to deal with and issues. And so that was not the priority. But I still plan to have at some point end-to-end encryption. That's something we can do. And if someone wants to help with that, that would be greatly appreciated.
But I think it's important to mention that we do, obviously, because it's a web app, you can set up SSL between your browser and your instance of the lounge, and then it can connect using SSL from the lounge to your IRC server. So you can be encrypted all the way from your browser to the IRC server, but there's no kind of trust no one end-to-end encryption between you and the other person, if that makes sense.
Certainly. So we've opened the can of worms. Let's go ahead and dive in. Oh, I'm mixing my metaphors terribly. The fork from Shout, what caused that? What were some of the problems and motivations that pushed you guys to the point where you decided to fork rather than just to work with the existing project?
Yeah, so I worked with the existing project for about, I want to say a year, but probably it's less than that, probably like 6 to 8 months. And it was great. It was a great start. And I started with, I saw that Shout was not active and had dozens, if not hundreds, of open issues. So I emailed the existing author, Matthias Herming, to if he needed help maintaining the project, which he said yes. I didn't need me as a maintainer. But over time, we realized that we had more of a community than I thought we did initially. And we had some, by we, I mean the community. We had some longer plans for plugin support, for splitting the project into multiple repos. So having a more community-centric project, and that led to us wanting a GitHub organization for that, at which point Matthias was more willing to keep it in its own, like to keep it as its own project, which is completely understandable. So we made the decision to have both, to have his project, personal project on one end that stays simple, and our version that has a bit more freedom and he doesn't have to plus one everything. so that's how it started. And actually the current name, The Lounge, is a name that he suggested. So it's not like we shut the door behind us. We were all angry. It's just, it was fairly friendly, and that's how we split it off.
It was a friendly fork. That is nearly unheard of in in the open source world.
there were tensions, but it was not like insult based like you can see sometimes. It was more, all right, we clearly have different needs, and the best way to do that is to split into personal project and community project. Mm-hmm. Does that summarize correctly, Al?
Yeah. And I should also note that I wasn't fully involved in the project at that point. I contributed a couple of things and was watching from the sidelines mostly. The actual fork, I think Jeremy worked very hard to try and keep it together. Because obviously forking is quite a dramatic thing, and sometimes it's kills projects. And so the decision wasn't made lightly at all. And, you know, it just came to the point where everybody realized that this was the best thing for the project as a whole.
So Al, you were part of the community at that point when the fork was being discussed and happened?
I'd come a couple of months earlier looking for a web-based IRC client. I'd seen a couple around, and Shout was the best one that I could find that I could host myself. I'd used IRC Cloud, and there were a couple of self-hosted ones. I think one called IRC Anywhere, and there were a couple of other at the time. But this was definitely the best, but it needed a lot of work to get to the point where I would be able to use it, you know, on an ongoing regular basis. And so I wanted to help push that along.
And what does the community and kind of the overall health of The Lounge look like now? How many contributors are there? Has it stagnated since the fork, or have you guys been able to kind of fulfill the game plan you had when that fork happened?
Well, the health is great. It's really great. To give a few numbers, when we forked, Shout had about 800, almost 900 commits. We are now at more than 4,000. We doubled the number of contributors. The lounge itself has seen 1,500 PRs. So the project is real. The hit is ongoing, and unfortunately, Shout itself, the development has completely stopped since then. So we try to keep an eye on the existing project, on the original project, to route people to the lounge when they ask questions. They're like, oh, this actually doesn't work. And we noticed that a lot of the feature requests that happen on Shout or the bug tickets are things that are actually fixed on the lounge. So it's been the health of the project has been really well.
So we do have yet another question from our IRC chat room, which I think will happen a lot today. Beatmaster wants to know, can it connect to a ZNC instance? And before you answer that, do either of you know what a ZNC instance is? Because I do not.
Yeah, I'll take that one. So okay. I'm going to refer to it as ZNC. Just bear with me on that one. So ZNC is what we would call a bouncer in IRC. So it works the way that part of the lounge works, where it will stay connected to IRC and allow other clients to connect to it. So it's kind of like a man in the middle IRC server, essentially. It connects to other IRC servers and then your client connects to it so that you can get the same sort of effect as what the lounge gives you, but with other clients rather than the lounge. And the answer is yes, you can connect to ZNC. All of the kind of main developers use ZNC as well, because it helps when developing. If you're having to restart the lounge a lot when you're developing features, you can quite often get, you know, banned from servers if you're reconnecting and reconnecting too much. So yeah, I certainly use it. I think Jeremy uses it, and most of the main developers use it for development, and some for in production as well.
I do not actually. I do not use ZNC. I run the lounge, the bare minimum setup for the lounge, which, because I'll say at the very beginning, acts as a bouncer. So I don't. In most cases, you can run it without ZNC. You can use ZNC, but it's not a requirement. So, and I've been using it like that for 2 years.
Some people are building an IRC onion where you have layer upon layer of proxies and bouncers. At what point is that no longer practical?
Well, I guess it just depends on what exactly you're trying to set up. So if I was just a user of the lounge, I don't think I'd be using ZNC. I only use it because it allows me, when I'm testing new features, to connect to the same servers as I'm connecting normally as well, because it gives me the closest possible environment that is similar to what I use in production.
That was a driving force for Shout, the original project, and also a driving force of why I chose Shout in the first place. It's because I was working in a, let's call it a legacy organization, where everyone has their setup done in like 1994, and you know, if it works, why fix it? I was living, and I wanted to keep track of, you know, my RC channels and stuff like that. But I didn't want to go through having a bouncer, a screen session, like all those extra things. And Shout was just one command to install, one command to run, and it just works. And that's kind of what we keep as a baseline for the lounge, is that by itself, it just works. And then you can do all sort of complicated setup that you want at ZNC, and all sorts of other things that I don't even know, because people have specific setup. But the baseline is, if you install it, it just works.
So that does lead nicely into another question I was wondering about. IRC, the protocol, has been around for, oh goodness, half of forever. Is it a protocol that is simple and works the same everywhere? Or are there 1,000 edge cases and corner cases that you guys have to work around and be continually careful of?
Oh boy, I feel like that's a bit of a leading question. yeah, so... I guess there's in terms of, you know, the base IRC specification, much of it is the same server to server. But being an open protocol, and because, as you say, it's been around for so long, and for much of that time, the protocol stagnated, no new features were added. Servers tended to add the features they wanted in their own ways. And so there are a lot of servers that have odd ways of doing things, but we can work around most of them. And most of, because of the way that the communication works and the fact that we can discuss what features we support client to server, that allows us to only, you know, try and use specific features if a server supports it. So yes, there are lots of edge cases, but that is something that we've been building up for quite a while. And a lot of that is not down to the Lounge. We use a great library for our connection to IRC, which we also contribute a lot to, which is built by the same people that build Kiwi, which is another IRC client. And that's really great. That kind of abstracts away a lot of the complexities of it.
Another frustration we often have, so plus one to everything that Al said, and because, like he said, because it's an open protocol, people are free to implement it whenever they want or to update their servers whenever they want. So for a big frustration we have is that there is an extension to or continuation to the protocol called IRC V3, which is meant to bring IRC to a modern 2012 world. And that's great. It has a lot of new things that, you know, will replicate what Slack has and stuff like that. But for example, Freenode, which is the biggest IRC server out there, uses an IRC server, an IRC daemon that is really old and doesn't use some of those features or most of those features. So we still have to make sure our client works with the old version of the protocol and you know, can work in a degraded way, pretty much. That's a frustration. But that's something, like Al said, we've been working on for quite a while, so it just works, but that's something we have to deal with.
So when someone pulls up an instance of the Lounge and connects to a server and then a channel, does it look to that server just as if it's any other client, or is there some special server-to-server magic that happens?
No, it just looks like any other client. Except the fact that it will generally never disconnect unless you're upgrading or you kill your server or something like that. To the IRC servers, it just looks like a normal client.
So I was quite interested hearing about your community engagement. While Jonathan was chatting with you, I've been digging into your GitHub repository. So tell me how your community works, because it looks to me like this is a purely community activity with no commercial connection whatsoever. Is that the case?
Yep, that's exactly the case. To be honest, lots of the pull requests, or maybe most of the pull requests, come from that one guy who is a project maintainer and probably lives in a world where days are 48 hours because he opens so much pull requests and he contributes so much that it's a great driving force. But we really like to have contributions from existing contributors or new contributors, and there is no company involvement whatsoever at this point.
Right. And it looks to me like there are three of you who are properly the maintainers of the project, handling all those pull requests. Is that right? Or have I misread the insights tab?
Yeah, so we have it's a tiny bit more level than that, but there is Al, this person I talked about, Expo, and me. We are the project maintainers, and we try to review and approve all the pull requests around. There are a few other people who are in the organization and focus on specific things. For example, there is one person who monitors the Docker container. There is another one who another person who is more looking at everything related to LDAP. So we try to have this compartmentalization like that. But overall, yes, we are three to four, five main people working on it, overseeing it. Okay.
So you guys have day jobs?
Oh yeah.
It looks like there's a lot of pull requests there. Do you ever find that this is taking over from the day job, and the day job is becoming your you know daytime hobby?
Oh, this is taking my sleep time, not my day job time. But I, you know, it's you arrive home at night, you look at who opened what, and you stay until all the pull requests are taken care of. And sometimes it takes 2 hours, sometimes it takes six. But yeah, no, I don't. The lounge is not related in any way to my day job, so I don't take time out of my day job to work on that. It would be unfair. I do, however, I'm currently on my day job. I'm working on a new project, which incidentally share a bunch of the technical choices. So I could reuse some of the things I learned from the lounge to my day job, which is pretty nice.
Right. And I noticed that there is actually a way people can put money in your tip jar over on opencollective.com. Do you actually have a relationship with Open Collective, or is that just for hosting a tip jar?
It's just for hosting a tip jar. The way they work is projects create a page on their website, and anyone can contribute with a one-time donation or a monthly donation. And this is right now, this is sponsoring our stickers. I just sent a bunch of sticker packs to our contributors. And you know, if we get enough support, we could extend to infrastructure or other things. I don't know, t-shirts to send and so on.
It's good to have somebody who's willing to pay to send you to FOSDEM, I found. maybe it doesn't quite run to that amount of money. So in your community, have you got everything you need? Is everyone you need there contributing, or are there some skills that you would really like to step forward from the gigantic Floss Weekly community? And it is a gigantic community. There's tens to hundreds of thousands of people who are listening in and watching at the moment. So what do you need?
I guess I'll start off with this one. So obviously we're always looking for more contributions for features. We have changed a lot since the fork. I'm really proud of how much work has gone into the lounge over the last 2 or so years. And there are so many new features compared to back then than but there's always stuff that we need to do. And, you know, if you have a look, we have several hundred issues open, many features that people would want, some which are, you know, getting us to sort of feature parity with projects like Slack and stuff like that, some of which is more hardcore IRC features that people would like, and some is kind of blue sky thinking of what people would want from this, things that we haven't seen in IRC clients or chat clients like that. So we're always looking for more stuff like that. I guess it would be nice if we get to the point where we have some people who are contributing regularly, being able to get some more maintainers, because I think the bottleneck at this point is definitely reviewing of pull requests. And so people who would come in and look at pull requests and suggest changes to them would also be great. I guess the other thing would be documentation. I know Jeremy's spending a lot of time just now rewriting the documentation for our upcoming release. But that's something that, like a lot of projects, we have sometimes let slide a bit. And that can obviously cause some issues with, you know, getting new people using as well as contributing to the project.
Right. What's this all written in? You know, what do people need to know to help you?
Yeah, so it's all JavaScript. The server is running in Node, and the front end is running in JavaScript, using jQuery for the front end manipulation.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I wanted to add that a skill that we are lacking and we would like to improve the client with is accessibility. So if people have a good or a particular interest in accessibility and want to improve the project, that would be that's something we would love, so that our project runs smoothly in a screen reader or in zoomed in environments or for like colorblindness checks and things like that. That's something we would appreciate.
Right.
And apart from that, I agree with everything that Al said.
Right, right. And do you have any this sounds a crazy thing to say because it is a client, but do you have any client software, like an app for Android or iOS, or is it only available running in the mobile browser?
I was just going to say it's only currently running in browsers, except I think we do have, someone was writing a version that wraps it up in Electron, so you can use that as a desktop app. But because we use a lot of the progressive web app features, using it on your mobile device can come close to a native client experience. So we have, on Android anyway, we have push notifications. You can add to your home screen and that will remove all of the Chrome around the in the browser. The features like that you'd normally previously only be able to get with native clients, because of the advances in web technologies, we can do most of that from just a web app.
Right. So one of the questions that that's come up in the chat room is Chumley would like to know how are the NickServe credentials stored? Because in these days of GDPR, that seems a very relevant question to ask.
So currently the NickServe passwords are stored in plain text on the server. And that obviously would be one of the issues that would stand between someone setting up this as a hosting service. That is in our list of issues to deal with. Obviously, storing them in plain text there is not great. But allowing us to connect to the IRC server when someone's not interacting with it directly makes that a bit difficult to deal with. There definitely are ways to solve it, but we haven't done that yet.
Mm. And to quote Randall Schwartz in the chat room, eek. That sounds kind of scary. do you have somebody working on that? You know, what do you have it all encrypted on the server? Are you in some way concealing it from the claws of the security services and the hacker disservice?
So I'm currently discussing with W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, to integrate the launch, and that's one of their pet peeves, is that the NickServe passwords are stored in plain text. There isn't much we can do about that because when, say, the server dies, it needs to reconnect. Unless you're around, there is no way to guess that. Just like on a server, most of the SSL keys would be stored unencrypted because if your web server restarts, it needs to have access to those. So it's kind of similar, but there are a few ways we could do to improve that. And I'd love to do that. I know there are some pros and cons, and some of us think that it would be a useless task because it's something that the client, the server needs to access anyway. But there are some mitigation we can do, and I would love to do something like this.
So I wanted to ask, I was going to ask about security, and this came up, so it's a perfect place for me to jump in. The IRC protocol, it's entirely based around the idea of you send your password in, isn't it? There's not like a use your public key to authenticate to get into an IRC server, is there?
No. The way that IRC generally works is it was kind of tacked on to the IRC protocol later on, and it was implemented with things like, as we mentioned, NickServe, which is a bot that will run on the IRC server that you message your password to. However, the IRC v3 protocols give a way to pass that in without sending, you know, just a plain message. But if you are connecting to the IRC server with SSL, then it is encrypted until it gets to the IRC server. So it's not going plain text over the wire.
Sure, but so long as you have to send the text password to the IRC server, there's fancy workarounds you can do, but you still essentially have to have that plain text password in the client. I mean, it's not really a weakness in the client. It's a weakness in the IRC protocol, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And that's why we currently store it in plain text, is because at some point you need to send it in plain text to the IRC server. So if we were to mitigate that, it would be to store it in a hashed way. So if someone has their eye on the screen, they just cannot read it out loud, right? But at some point, we would need to decipher it before sending it to the server. But yeah, that's exactly what you said.
And so even if you encrypt it, you're not really encrypting it, because you've got to store the keys with the lock. So the best you can do, the way it sits now, the best you can do is just obfuscate it and hope no one is smart enough to figure out your obfuscate. But it's open source, so the algorithm is going to be right there. Yeah, so I understand Randall's eek, but at the same time, this is not on you guys at all. That is a weakness with IRC, I suppose.
Go ahead. I was going to say there would be ways to work around that. So the way that you send with IRCv3, you send your message through. You could change that to allow you to send something rather than a plain text password, a way to, you know, a public key or something, or the server could send us back. Obviously, we still are needing to save that locally, but they could, you know, send us their public key and we can encrypt it with that and send it back. But that would involve server support. You know, currently all the servers would just support sending in the plain text password.
So you mentioned this IRCv3. Is that one of the problems that it is trying to address in the new spec?
I'm not sure whether it's looking at that particularly, but there are a lot of things that it's looking at, a lot of feature requests that people wanted in IRC that, as I say, as I said earlier, IRC stagnated for a long time, and there are a lot of kind of modern chat ideas that didn't work in IRC. So, for example, you might talk about threaded conversations, reactions to conversations, stuff like that just wasn't supported in IRC until IRCv3 came along. And they're constantly adding new features to the protocol there. I'm not sure whether they're looking at that specifically. I will definitely look at that after the call.
does the lounge already support the kind of draft version of this V3 protocol?
So V3 is not a kind of big bang approach. They release features as and when they are agreed by the IRC V3 working group. So we support some of the features. We're looking at supporting all of the currently defined features. And, you know, it'd be nice to be able to support some of the draft features. But that's all, you know, work that we have to prioritize based on what else we want to do. The short answer is we support some of the IRC V3 features, but not all yet.
And there is a way to find out which, apart from looking at the code, there are two ways that I know of. There is a website, I don't know the URL, but there is a website that gathers all the IRC V3 features, and it's like a table, all those features, all those clients, and which one is a yes, which one is a no. And I think we have a few lines on that. And we on our GitHub repository, there is something called a GitHub project, which is like a few lanes, a to-do lanes and a done lane. And we have one dedicated to IRCv3 where we can say, okay, this is something we want to support, but we don't support yet. This is something we had an issue before and we implemented it in version X and so on.
Website is ircv3.net, by the way.
Nice and simple. I like it. So one of the other things that I think about with this is the lounge essentially requires either port 80 or port 443, so an HTTP or HTTPS service, to be exposed to the whole internet, doesn't it? To be able to really make it useful to get to it from anywhere.
Yeah, so you have two ways to do that. One is running it through the ports that you mentioned directly, or what a lot of people do, and I do it, and I'm pretty sure Al does it too, is run it behind an HTTP proxy, such as Nginx or Apache, so that you have the Nginx server that routes the traffic to the lounge. So the lounge can run on port, 9000, which is the default port, and serve this to port 443 for HTTPS version.
Really, what I'm kind of getting at there, what I'm wondering about is what's in place to make sure that there isn't a vulnerability in the lounge itself, so that someone can, you know, once they discover it, attack and then get into the machine behind the service. You know, what kind of protections are you intentionally coding defensively and all of those things?
Obviously, we're not going to say that the lounge has no bugs and no vulnerabilities. No code is perfect. We have had a couple of issues in the past, which people have disclosed to us and privately on IRC, and then we've fixed that and pushed out updates before publicly announcing what the vulnerability is. We obviously try and code defensively. The problem that we currently have is that obviously a lot of the code is legacy. The shout code was going back quite a few years. And so there's, quite a backlog of interesting features and, code smells that have to be brought out. Because as was mentioned before, shout was started just as a pet project by one person. And obviously you don't code to the same standard if you're just writing a pet project than if you're writing code for a community.
We also have on our GitHub repo, we have guidelines for responsible disclosure of security vulnerabilities. And that's something you can often find in project that says, if you find a security issue, don't just scream it on the public web and say, oh, there is a security issue. Please, there is this security@thelounge.chat email address. Send us that. Be nice. We'll do our best to fix it. And when it's fixed, rather sooner than later, we can announce it and tell people to upgrade their versions. That's common practice, I would say.
Without any corporate sponsorship or commercialization, I assume there isn't any sort of a bug bounty in place.
There is a bounty source that I found out kind of by accident. It's not a security bug bounty like GitHub does, where you get hundreds of billions of dollars for fixing a security issue. But someone put $20 on an open issue, and so if you go to bounty source, it's not something we officially support, at least as of yet. But bounty source doesn't need approval from the maintainer, so if people want to use that, that's community driven, so go ahead. We won't be against, obviously, but we don't have something like officially one and two for security specifically.
Sure. And then what's coming for the future? Is there a release planned soon, and what does the roadmap look like?
Oh yeah. So we've been working on the V3 for quite a bit. Quite a bit means maybe 3 months now. And Al mentioned this earlier, but right now if you shut down the server and restart it, you will lose your existing activity, your existing conversations. V3 comes with a reload of the scrollback, which is like a huge feature that has been asked since prior to the launch. Like I remember on the shout days, people were asking, why are my conversations disappearing? And we're also starting with a pluggable API. So the launch has been a one shop project for a while, but now we want to have plugins and themes and people could extend the launch and take that to the extreme, which is start to extract some of the internal features into plugins that ship with the project, but that way we can have ownership of those features. So if someone, I mentioned LDAP earlier, if we extract LDAP in its own plugin, even if it ships with the project, now we can have a complete ownership of those projects by people who know very much about LDAP. We worked a lot on improving the UI, the accessibility, and like Al said, revamping the docs. Did I miss anything, Al?
No, I think that's everything that I can remember for the V3.
So that's for the V3. Then the plans for the future, we want to... Al is spending a lot of time on the pluggable API. That's something we want to spend a lot of effort on. Al also mentioned he's working on a self-contained mode, which is going to be an extension to the project. So just to be clear, you don't need an IRC server. It's just something that could come up on top of the launch so that you can run it in a similar way to Slack. We don't have file support, file upload support, something we'd like to do. We have an open pull request about internationalization that's been here for a while. Now that we have scrollback reload, we want to be able to search through old messages. That would be nice. You can have a search feature and lots of UX, UI improvements, offline mode and other things like that. And like Al mentioned, supporting as much of the IRC V3 features as we can.
Right. You mentioned there that you a plugin API. Does that already exist, or is that a future development?
It exists in a small version. So we support themes just now, which are just CSS files, not in a released version, but in master on our Git, we have a couple of other small things. It's not massive at this point, but it is enough to get things started. And you know, there is support for some of the plugins that people would like to write.
And what are those plugins that people would like to write? Is it things like Slack integration?
One example could be building a Slack gateway. There are things like adding extra commands. So, for example, if you want to add a command that searches through GIFs on a site, on a website, or if you want to add some other UI features like allowing us to upload to. So, Jeremy mentioned the file upload. We'll add that. A plugin API for that, so you can choose where things upload to. So people might want them to upload to their own servers, or you might want to have them to upload to Imgur or something like that.
There are two other things that we have right now that are not pluggable, but have been done in a way that a pluggable plugin support could be fairly easily added. One is so we store the logs. Originally, we stored the logs in text, and we added support for storing the logs in a SQLite format, which is what gives us the access to the scrollback history. And it's very close to a version where you could write your own plugin to store your logs in MySQL or in things a bit more involved like Kafka or whatever. Some decentralized storage or other things like that. And the other thing is right now to authenticate to the launch. So because you can log in to the same session from every device, different moment, you connect with username and password. So we have the local authentication support, they both ship with the launch, but. So the local authentication is you just have username, password, and your administrator creates new users. But we also have LDAP support, and people have been asking for other authentication mechanisms, and that's something we could probably fairly easily do, which is plug in API for new authentication mechanisms.
Right. And that's all going to be JavaScript. You're not going to try and go into something different for doing this plugin integration. Only a JavaScript binding.
Yeah, that's the plan for now. We don't we don't have plugin support. So if we have some plugin support, we'll stick to one language. And you know, I can't predict the future, but that's something we'll probably start with, is just like JavaScript support, at least for now.
Excellent. Yeah, something we could add is support for WebAssembly, which would allow you to write plugins in other languages. We don't have that just now, but Node does support WebAssembly, so that's something we could reasonably easily add if there was, if people wanted that. I don't think that would be too difficult to add.
Well, looks pretty cool. Well, I'm going to have to go check that out. We're coming to the end of our allotted time, according to my clock on the wall. So do you have any final words? Maybe we'll start with you, Al.
So I guess there's obviously a lot we couldn't touch on based on the time. I think that the lounge could end up being a reasonable alternative for people who want to run something like Slack, but don't want to run with a third-party host, or don't want to run something that is closed source. And IRC has improved a lot from the days before IRC v3. There's a lot of new features coming out. People have written off IRC because of its age, but its age actually gives it some advantages in the fact that there are so many things that support it. As you were saying, you had libpurple on a couple of weeks. They support IRC. And so the idea of having a client that anyone can set up their own self-hosted modern web app for communication across their team, for communication across their company, is really exciting to me. And IRC, I feel, is the protocol to do that in.
Right. And I should ask you, because it's a statutory requirement, if I'm standing in as Randall, I have to ask you about what your favorite scripting language is, which might be a redundant question in this context.
Yes, I'm sure you could guess that. That's it's definitely JavaScript.
Okay, and how about you, Jeremy? Are you also a fan of JavaScript, or do you have repressed anger that bubbles under the whole time you're working on the lounge?
JavaScript comes with a lot of frustrations, but the latest versions of the language have been pretty nice. I think right now I've been playing with TypeScript for a few weeks now, and I think it's becoming my favorite scripting language. It's so nice to play with.
Right. And what editor do you edit that in?
I currently use Atom, and I'm looking at VS Code, but I've been using Atom for a couple of years now.
Right. I had a funny feeling you were not going to be an Emacs user. How about you, Al? Are you the closet Emacs user in the community?
No, I mostly use IntelliJ to write my code. If I'm doing something on the command line, I would use Nano though.
Right. Oh. Right. Exciting stuff. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, the pair of you.
Thank
it's
you.
Been very interesting. It's a project that I hadn't seen before, and we very much value your presence. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
So that's it. That's the lounge. What do you think, Jonathan?
I'm kind of excited to have yet another Nano user. If Randall thinks he is in the minority, I feel so even more.
I am a Nano user.
Well, no wonder we get along together so well. The lounge, really, really interesting what they're doing. I feel like they are one or two releases away from being a really good solution. There's a couple of things that still need to get worked out. The lack of built-in scroll back, potentially being one of them. And then the storing passwords in the clear. It'd be great if they could come up with some very clever way to get around that. I have to say, though, I understand the limitations they're working with. It's going to be extremely difficult to do that in a useful and in a good way. But, just looking at what they've got, their community, and looking at the interface and what it does already, lots and lots of potential there. Really interesting project.
Yeah, it's a big and strong community they've got there. I think it's a very interesting project. I know that I'm going to go back to the people I was discussing chat rooms with and suggest that we maybe fling up a Docker container with this inside it for our chat room. I'm slightly concerned about the ad hoc nature of the community. I worry that they are, you know, it does look like it's really cool stuff that is just on the edge of breakthrough. And I kind of worry what would happen if they did get commercial interest in what's going on, because I think they would be very easy to disrupt if you were a commercial backer. The code is all MIT, so it all belongs to me and you just as much as it does to them. And there's no legal entity owning a trademark or anything, so there's no protection from a commercial invasion. So I think that would be the only area where I would have a concern. It all looks like great stuff. Do you have any concerns at all?
I think as far as the commercialization goes, at least what I've seen for projects like this, what has to come first is the interest in commercialization. I mean, you could set up a corporation and put money into it, but if nobody's willing to pay you for anything, then, you know, you've tossed your money to the wind. I would imagine that if they suddenly had several people come to them and say, hey, we want to use this, but we are willing to pay for it, but we want a corporation behind it, they could say, you know, one of those two guys or somebody else in the project could say, well, you know, if we could put together a game plan that lets one of us go full time, then we can definitely do that. And I think there's a lot of projects that, you know, have a great idea, but they're in that, especially open source projects, they have a great idea, but they're in that position of, you know, because we've given our code away for free and a lot of them because of what the project does, there's not a easy way to make money from it. And so there's not a corporation behind it just because they don't have a business plan, but they also don't have customers that are maybe willing to pay them for it. It's an interesting catch 22 that many of us find ourselves in.
Yeah, I think that sustainability of open source is the big topic inside the community of communities that is open source at the moment. Interesting new report on it came out from Mozilla just today, but that's a topic for another context. So yes. Coming up on Floss Weekly, we have a full list of what's available if you visit twit.tv and have a look at our webpage. The next week, there's Hubblestack and Krista Edwards. And then we have React PHP coming up on May 30th. There's a gap on June the 6th. Don't know what's going to happen that day. But I think I'm going to be busy traveling to EclipseCon. Then there's RBSpy, KeyCloak, the Pillar Project, and Friendica all coming up before the beginning of July. So I think you're going to want to keep on coming back. If you want to have your project included in Floss Weekly, what we need you to do is to ask the project leader to send an email to Randall, and the address is on the Floss Weekly website, and get added to the extremely large spreadsheet of potential guests that is up there. You might be surprised how quickly you get on the show, actually. I would really love you to come and talk to me if you see me at conferences. I'm going to be going to a few conferences over the coming weeks. I'm going to be in Brussels on the 23rd for a day conference. And then I'm hoping that I'm going to make it to OW2Con in Paris on the 7th of June, where I'm going to give one of the opening plenary talks. And then I'm giving the keynote at EclipseCon in Toulouse in France on the 12th of June. Do please come to one of those two events. I think they're going to be really good conferences. And then there's obviously the big things like OSCON is coming up. If you're going to come to OSCON, you should. I was looking at hotel prices today, and it's extortionately expensive in Portland. So if you're going to come, do get booking, because you're going to find yourself paying a king's or a Trump's ransom in order to attend there. I'm also regularly writing under the pen name Webmink. You'll find me as Webmink on Twitter and in other places. And everything that I write shows up at meshedinsights.com, which I would love you to read and hopefully enjoy. Anything you'd like to talk about, Jonathan?
Simon, you're going and keynoting and all kinds of stuff going on. I'd just love for somebody to pay for me to go to some of these conferences. you can follow me at JP_Bennett on Twitter. That is where I talk about open source and very occasionally talk about political things. I try to stay out of those conversations most of the time because they tend to get me in trouble. But that is where you can follow me at. And, of course, here as well on Floss Weekly from time to time.
Well, that's all extremely cool. We've pretty much run out of time and breath here, so we better wrap up. But you can find Floss Weekly on this channel at this time every week. Thank you very much for tuning in to Floss Weekly.